No one has to sell you on the power of positive thinking. But Jim and Peter want you to know why it's so important to commanding your ideal performance state. Your attitudes and emotions are closely linked, and the connection shows in both your behavior and your body chemistry. Assuming full responsibility for your attitudes is at the very heart of mental toughness.
Names like Connors, Everett, Lindell come to mind when the issue of mental toughness is raised in tennis. In the world of boxing, however, the name Boom Boom Mancini quickly comes to mind. Quite simply, he is considered to be one of the mentally toughest fighters in boxing history. Heart, courage, gutsy, determined, and relentless are nearly synonymous with the name Mancini. Ray's story reads like a Rocky Balboa revisited. His popular career became a crusade to win the title that his father, Lenny, could never capture. On May 8, 1982, Ray finally brought home the coveted WBA title for his father. An unthinkable tragedy occurred during Ray's second defense of his title in November of 1982. In the 14th round of his fight, his opponent fell unconscious from a blow to the head and eventually died. Ray agonized over the tragedy for months, and after holding the crown for only 2 years, exited the sport of boxing confused and disheartened. 4 long years passed before Ray decided to once again enter the ring, this time to fight his greatest rival, Hector Macho Camacho. I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to work with Ray for 2 months preceding the fight to help him prepare psychologically and emotionally for the battle. I'll never forget the phone call I got from him shortly after I began working with him. He expressed a deep concern about the fact that he had allowed a negative thought to enter his mind. I immediately asked Ray for a clarification, as I was confused by his concern over a simple negative thought. He responded by saying that he found himself thinking negatively about the pain he would have to endure during the fight, particularly about the possibility that he might get cut around his eyes. In his last few fights before he retired, Ray had had some real problems with excessive bleeding around his eyes. I asked Ray how often the thought had occurred to him, and he said only once. I was confused as to why Ray would be so concerned about a simple negative thought. Ray's answer was most revealing. "I learned as a young fighter that negative thinking and emotion really hurt me," he responded. "Have you ever seen a negative fighter in the ring?" he asked. "Negative thinking slows my hands and my feet, and I get hit. That's why fighters are always talking positive and trying to pump themselves up in and out of the ring." I suddenly realized how profound Ray's words really were. I thought of all the negative thinking that people engage in outside the ring, outside the arena of sport. I wondered how quickly we would shore up our negative thinking. If each time we became negative, we would literally get hit in the face. If I have learned anything from my work over the past several years, it is that attitude control is fundamental to consistency, to performing well under pressure, to performing anything well, be it in sport or outside of it. It's just a little tougher to learn the lesson in life than it is in a sport like boxing. Just a few hits in the face drive the connection home very quickly.
A friend of ours, Roger Staubach, is a person who has probably the best attitude I've ever experienced. And always with a smile. I mean, you could tell the guy was loving. I mean, he was happy that they scored a touchdown with a minute to go because it gave him a chance to get out there again. He loved the challenge. And what Roger has done, now that he's entered the world of real estate in Dallas, Texas, Roger has established a very successful commercial real estate firm, and I believe has opened in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. And while everybody else is bemoaning a tough economy, certain people are not thinking about it that way at all. As a matter of fact, they're saying, if it's getting tough, there's got to be a lot of opportunity out there. The attitude is there. Attitude is very contagious. A great leader with good attitude can take everybody with him or her to the top. Attitude is so important in business because it's one of the only cutting edges that we have. To you as a performer, attitude is so essential because A, it relieves stress. B, it helps you see a whole bunch of new things. Breakdown equals breakthrough if and only if you have the right attitude. There were these two Zen monks going home from toward the monastery, and they came to a river, and a woman was standing by the river, and she was crying. And the one monk said to her, "My dear lady, why are you crying?" And she said, "My dress is long. The river is swollen. I'm to be married. I can't go across the river without getting my dress wet. What can I do?" "My dear lady," he said, "jump on my back. I will carry you across." So they went across the river. He puts her down on the other side. He bows, and he and his brother monk go back to the monastery. Well, about a mile before the monastery, he's noticing that the other monk has said nothing. And he turns to him and he said, "My dear brother monk, what's wrong? What's troubling you?" He said, "You know, we monks are allowed to have nothing to do with women." He said, "My dear brother, I put that woman down on the banks of the river 5 miles back. It's been you who has been carrying her all the way to the monastery." And now you look at the difference in attitudes. And the one who's borne down by frustration, anger, etc., who probably had the toughest journey of his life on the way back to the monastery, who saw nothing good, nature passed him by, there was nothing there at all, and the other one who simply did what needed to be done, and he will find something the moment they walk into the monastery that needs to be done, and he will end his life as a happy person. And attitude is really the key, and I think we don't spend enough time analyzing our own attitude. What does it take for me to change my attitude in order for me to become a great performer?
This has really been driven home powerfully in tennis. I've spent the last several years trying to understand very precisely what the most successful competitors are doing between points that help them to be so tough during points. Specifically, how they think, when they think it, and what they do between points that help them to be so ready when the point's being played. The best players are very, very disciplined thinkers. The mentally toughest are very disciplined. They only think certain things at certain times. As soon as the point is over, it's called the positive physical response period. The only thing that the top players typically think are thoughts that keep them positively energized. Thoughts like, "Let it go, no problem. It's okay if they make a mistake. If they hit a great shot, come on, yes, let's go, yes." It happens only 3 to 5 seconds, but invariably they go through the same routines mentally. We found this out by putting remote microphones on players and having them verbalize everything that was going through their head. We then came to understand that that connects to emotion. If you think, for instance, the thought that "I can do something, I can do that," it brings enthusiasm emotionally. If I think, "Come on, challenge," that brings the emotion of excitement and more energy in an emotional sense. If I think, "I got to do this, oh, I got to win this point," that produces fear, it produces pressure. What we think to a great extent influences the emotional climate that we create at any moment in time. That's why thinking, positive thinking, is so crucial. Not because it's just nice to be a positive thinker. It's important because of its connection to emotion, which connects to the physiology of the body. That's why it's so important. We also found that during the relaxation cycle, which is the longest period of time between points with players, the only thing the top players are basically thinking are thoughts that help them relax. Cool out, chill out, easy, relax. They're very disciplined because those words connect to images which connect to emotion. During the preparation period, they're actually thinking very specifically about what they want to do in a very logical way. But that lasts a very short time. And then the last stage in tennis between points is the ritual stage, where they go through imagery and visualization specific to the execution. That sequence represents tremendous discipline. But that's what characterizes the mentally tough person. They have come to understand the critical connection between thinking, emotion, and maximum performance.
You know, being a disciplined thinker in sport really translates also quite well into the world of business, but also into the world of education. Too many times people think positive thinkers are the Pollyannas of the world, the people that have listened to Zig Ziglar one too many times and it's bent their brain. And in fact, what we find is the most realistic people. John Sculley, in his recent coming out with 3 or 4 new low-priced apples, I mean, he knows that there were some mistakes made. He's realistic. He pulled the chain, confident. He knows the new machines are going to make it. So out he comes with some new ones. And it's a real key that negative people don't make it to the top because they don't get things done. And the reasons they don't get things done is because of their negative energy. They close off their categories, their options. They don't see new creative solutions. They're not aware of things happening in the marketplace, and therefore they end up losing. Number two is what we call honest commitment. And how many times have you out there made a decision where after you've made the decision, you're really not sure of it, so you back off? And our feeling is that if you're positive after you've made the decision, you pursue it, you don't tank, you push through. It's the pushing through, it's the honest commitment to the decision that will make things happen. And thirdly, what we see over and over and over again is consistency. How do I maintain a positive attitude? It's realistic confidence with honest commitment on a consistent basis. And that is my disciplined thinking, where I set an environment that helps me stay with what I've decided, and I pursue it and I pursue it. Risk and persist is the key here. And I think that the heroes of our American culture in the last couple of years all have exemplified these three ideas, that being an optimistic thinker, having a good attitude, is nothing like being Pollyanna. It's built on realistic confidence. It's built on absolutely honest commitment and real consistency.
If you've ever wondered about the importance of attitude to a coach, pick the best coaches that you know, the most successful ones, and ask them that same question. And they'll tell you overwhelmingly, universally, that attitude is everything. Attitude is the stuff of which champions are made. The issue of attitude control is so fundamental to a coach that when he gets a person on the team with, quote, a bad attitude, if he's got an attitude problem, it's like the kiss of death. Coaches cannot stand that because they know the impact of this has on the short term and the long term. And they're right. Coaches were right. They maybe didn't understand fully why it was so important, but the connection in terms of sports science is becoming more and more obvious and more clinically verifiable. Attitude makes a difference because of its connection to emotion and emotion to the physiology and biochemistry of the body.
The reason positive attitude is so important is that the world brainwashes us to be negative. It happens all the time. The normal is negative, and most people find it very acceptable to get angry with problems, to lose their attitude, and no one's going to blame you too much. But what we're after is the person who wants to become mentally tough, which means you're going to have to take that normal, which is negative, and change it. And if you remember reading Tom Sawyer in high school, Tom Sawyer at the first part of the book was punished by Aunt Polly for missing school. And so what he had to do as a punishment was whitewash her fence. There is no way that on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, when all his friends are playing, that Tom Sawyer could be a happy camper. He feels embarrassed, he feels cheated, etc. What does he do? He goes out and he creates a play frame. And he gets up and he starts singing and whistling and painting the fence as if he loves it. He puts on such a great act that his people come by, his friends, and they start off by jeering at him, ha ha ha, you have to paint the fence on Saturday. And he says, nope, don't have to, want to. And they say, oh, I mean, they're beginning to think maybe there's something in this. So all of a sudden, they begin trading him their things like pet frogs, half-eaten apples, quarters, etc., so that they can dive in on this happy state of affairs that he set up. And at the end of it, here is Tom Sawyer sitting on a fence and whistling while all his friends are painting the hell out, whitewashing the hell out of this fence. And it's such a great scenario for us to be aware of, that we, with the right attitude, can leap in and positively whitewash, brainwash ourselves into a positive attitude.
Tom Gullickson was plagued at one point in his career with problems with tiebreakers. Tiebreakers in tennis mean that the score gets to be tied at 6-6, and you go into kind of a sudden death final playoff. Well, Tom Gullickson found himself playing very badly in tiebreakers, and he said, it's driving me crazy. I can't stand to play tiebreakers because I lose so many important matches in tiebreakers. Some people really feel that they're playing badly in tiebreakers, but when you look at the record, they're really playing pretty well. We looked at Tom's record, and he, in fact, was playing miserably in tiebreakers. He was losing most of them. I said to Tom, I have a very simple strategy I want you to follow, and I want you to follow it for the next several weeks, and we'll see the impact it has. Well, Tom was expecting I was going to come up with some really complicated, high-tech kind of formula. And when I told him what to do, he was kind of disappointed, and he was really puzzled by the formula that I'd given him. I said, Tom, what I want you to do, for every single day that passes, I want you to simply repeat to yourself 25 times, I love tiebreakers. He looked at me and said, that's a bloody lie. What do you mean I love tiebreakers? I hate tiebreakers. And I said, I want you to simply repeat to yourself 25 times, I love tiebreakers, and I want you to make a small little sign and put on the mirror in your bedroom or in the bathroom a sign, I love tiebreakers, and that's it. I said, I want you to do it, then I want you to give me the report. So about 2 weeks passed, and he called me, and he said, from Phoenix, he was playing team tennis, and he called and he said, I want a tiebreaker today. And I said, great. And he said, I don't think it has anything to do with that nonsense about I love tiebreakers. And I said, fine. I said, have you been doing it? He says, yes, it's killing me, but I'm doing it. 25 times a day, I've got the sign on my mirror, I'm doing it. 2 days later, he called me. In team tennis, you play several matches in a week. He called me and says, I won 2 tiebreakers today. And I said, yeah. And he says, and I still don't think it has anything to do with that nonsense about I love tiebreakers. You should hear Tom Gullickson tell this. He tells the story much better. He said, I knew something had changed. He said, it was the U.S. Open. He was playing in the first round against John Alexander. And he said he found himself thinking, if I can just get this guy to a tiebreaker, I'll beat him. And he, in fact, did. He won the third set in a tiebreaker, went on and won the fourth set 6-4, and the fifth set, the score was tied all the way through, went to 2-all, 3-all, 4-all, and he said the whole time he found himself thinking, if I can just get him to a tiebreaker, I'll beat him. He got him to a fifth set tiebreaker, and he won the tiebreaker. And ever since then, Tom Gullickson's performance in tiebreakers has been incredible. And he came to understand something very simple, that the way you think about something affects the way you, in fact, feel emotionally and physically respond to that event. And as he began to, in a sense, program in an almost brainwashing fashion, very rote fashion, he started to find that his attitude toward tiebreakers started to change, just like his attitude had changed negatively in the same way. And before long, he started to love tiebreakers, and his performance changed dramatically in response to that.
One of the keys that we point out in Mentally Tough, and that we'd urge you, if you want to learn how do I get a positive attitude, how do I brainwash myself to a positive attitude, we've broken it down to 3 relatively simple steps. The first one is, and it takes a little searching, to write down, and I think writing's the best way to do it, identify those things that you want to change, because they're holding you back from looking at things in a positive way, from maintaining a positive attitude. So understand what they are, first and foremost. Be alert to them. Then number 2, you reprogram. You reprogram in a variety of ways. One could be the writing of what we call bathroom mirror stickers. The bathroom is a place when you're shaving or you're fixing your hair or putting on makeup, you look into the mirror. Well, what if you have a little sticker up there that keeps beaming back at you saying, I love problems, or whatever it is. I love my boss. I love problems. Whatever it is, in other words, chant it, sing it, say it, write it. But program around you how you want to reprogram yourself. And then thirdly, whenever you feel the old feeling, whenever you're saying negative self-talk to yourself, and you can hear it. When I'm playing tennis, I can hear myself saying, oh, you dummy, you missed that backhand. At that moment, you can say, stop. And it's amazing how quickly those thoughts go away. Because what Jim has been pointing out is that it's disciplined thinkers that make great performers. I will not allow, to the extent that I can, negative thoughts into my purview. What I will do is say, stop, I will change them, and I will substitute for them very positive thoughts.
There's one other dimension that I think is really important, and this again was driven home to me in my professional work with athletes. And it's very simple, but very profound, and that is that if you want to feel a particular way, if you want to influence the way you're thinking, act the way you want to think. To look intense, to look positive on the outside, to try to capture the essence of what a mentally tough person would look like, to try to project the intensity and the feelings of the ideal performance state, to capture those emotions in terms of acting them out, and the reverse happens. You start actually to feel in genuine ways those emotions, and your thinking starts to line up as well. So acting can also be, in a way, as Peter said, it's a way of stopping the negative stuff from occurring. And yeah, we're always going to get negative thoughts. But if you let them pass through without getting all upset by them, simply say stop or start acting as if you in fact believe quite the opposite. Act the way you want to feel and think, it suddenly starts to happen.
We call it fake it till you make it. And it's one of the most powerful things that you can do.
If you want to look at how powerful this really is, you just take a look at what the Marine Corps does to young men and women now who are, you know, snot-nosed teenagers, and suddenly, within literally 3 or 4 months, turn them into courageous young men and women who are willing literally to put their life on the line. How does that unbelievable transformation take place? Well, they begin from the very first day to make them start acting like Marines. They make them walk, carry themselves, head and shoulders. No whining, no complaining, no negativism, none. If they detect even the slightest negative behavioral response, they're nailed for it. They must project on the outside as if they are disciplined thinkers, as if they are the epitome of positive thinkers. And by simply choreographing the physical patterns, the mental discipline starts to line up. And within literally a 3-month period, you have someone who can walk in front of the enemy and not run away, not tank, not go crazy, but to stay there and to show great courage.
It's interesting what Jim has said, because what we find is that the University of California School of Medicine has come up with the science that goes behind what the Marines do and what we as performers can do for ourselves. So you smile when you're happy, and you grimace when you're angry, and you frown when you're upset, but literally what they've shown is that the reverse can be true, that the nerve signals run both ways. That is, you can feel better as a result of smiling, become angry merely by grimacing, or get annoyed by frowning.
Just for a moment, I'd like for you to try something. I'd like for you to take on the look of a very unhappy person. I want you to make the look of someone who is frowning, who is very unhappy, who is very sad. I want you to hold that. Your face, muscles, if someone were to look at you, you look terribly unhappy, very, very sad. You're frowning big time. Hold that for a minute. Now, how do you feel? How did that affect you emotionally? That's how delicate the mind-body connection is. That you literally start changing the way you think and the way you feel by simply moving significant muscles of your face in a predetermined direction. Isn't that amazing confirmation about how precise we must be in trying to balance this business of the mind and the body?
I remember some time ago that I was working on a project with the governor's office in the state of Colorado, and the project had a large amount of money parlayed for it through the Senate. And we had gone along for 6 or 7 months, and because we had some downturns in the economy, the Senate decided to rescind the rest of the funds. And so we were to have a big meeting at the governor's mansion to talk about how we closed down the project. So I went to the mansion, and I was angry. And I was so angry that I was going to show them that I was angry. I did not say a word the whole meeting. Every time someone started to look at me, I looked away with a kind of a puff of disgust. And 3 days later, I realized, you know, really what I had done. I'd let my pride carry through. I'd maintained negative emotions. Nothing happened. Needless to say, I never got a call from the governor's office to help out on anything else again, for money or not for money. And one of the things I've really learned to do is play tennis in a whole different way. Specifically, when I play against people I should kill. And I did so not too long ago. We were tied for all. And you know what happens when you're supposed to win and you're tied? You get frustrated, angry, because now you're embarrassed. Even if you win 6-4, you feel embarrassed. So I stopped for a moment, and I literally thought back to the governor of Colorado. And I played the rest of the time. I actually finally won 7-5. But the point was, I had learned from my mistake. I re-carried fun into the game, whereas before, I had let my negative emotions take over. The good attitude saved the day. It was a lot of fun. And the next set, I killed him, so I must have been right.
It's kind of the bottom line to this whole area. Attitude is so fundamental to performance, and it's fundamental to this program. If you go into this program with what we would call a bad attitude or with negative expectations, we pretty much know the outcome. So that the attitude that you carry forth in terms of your openness to change in this program will largely determine the amount of success that you will experience. Attitude will pave the way for the emotional changes, which can then become the basis for a whole new energy management capability, a whole new learning cycle. But you must start with an attitude. And what does that mean? It means you got to start looking like this is working. You got to start walking around and carrying yourself as if you are happy to be involved in this kind of effort. You are a professional performer. You are in training. You are like a Marine. You're going to make this work in your mind. And before you believe it, you're going to, in a sense, fake that it's going to work. And then all of a sudden, you sense changes are going on inside you. You're going to guard the way you think about your efforts with this program. You're not going to allow a lot of doubt to freely float around like Ray Mancini, the negative thoughts you get hit in the face. You want this program to work for you. You want this to be successful. That's why you purchased the audio cassette series. So let's give it the absolute best opportunity for having a maximum impact on you personally. And that means you have to expect success. You have to approach it with an open kind of mind and allow the full impact of this program to reach you.